Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a series of podcasts from Verint featuring chats and discussions with leading figures from the contact center, CX, and customer engagement industry in the Asia-Pacific region. During this series, we want to find out what customer service organizations are doing during these challenging times and try and discover what it is that drives the leaders in this space and what makes them tick. My name is Martin Riddle, and as well as being your host for this series, I'm also Verint's Vice President of Marketing for the region. Over the past dozen or so episodes of the Verint podcast, we've had some great chats and insightful conversations with senior executives responsible for delivering customer service right across the APAC region. Today, however, we're going to take a slightly different approach and talk to an analyst to get their perspective on what's happening with the industry right now. Our guest has been studying and researching the customer engagement market in the APAC region for over 20 years, and some may say that what she doesn't know about the industry perhaps isn't worth knowing. From the analyst firm Ecosystem, it's my great pleasure to welcome their principal advisor, Audrey William. Audrey, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Martin. Great to be on your show.
It's wonderful to have you on board. Hey, Audrey, as we speak right now, with me in Brisbane and you in Sydney, COVID restrictions are being eased back by the respective state governments. And aside from a problematic flare-up in Victoria, Australia as a country appears to have got the situation largely under control. However, across the wider APAC region, there are still plenty of countries who are desperately fighting to get on top of things, and this may well be the new normal for quite a time to come. What do you think this means for the industry?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, I think this is the new normal. I think it's been really challenging, Martin, for a lot of industries, not just here in Australia, but across the region. You know, for example, a lot of organizations have downsized. There have been a lot of job losses, but there have also been a lot of good learnings during this time. And I think, you know, companies are working very hard to make do with what they have right now in terms of the employees, in terms of the sales staff they have. But there is also a great concern about what does this mean for our business, you know, in the next 2 years. You know, is this going to go on for a long time? What does it mean to the travel industry, for example? Because, you know, as Martin, you and I know, as part of our jobs, we used to travel a lot. I think even that is going to become a luxury right now, because we're in this new normal whereby video conferencing is being used on a daily basis, all the collaboration tools. And you're starting to see this new trend that's happened in the last 6 months where organizations are saying, hey, we can get a lot done by having employees work from home. So yeah, very interesting times ahead, but definitely also challenging times in terms of, you know, jobs being lost. And I think I've also started seeing a lot of empathy being shown in the industry, which I think is a real positive. There's a lot more understanding right now. So yeah, interesting times.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you've had a huge amount of CX experience right across the region. I'd be interested to hear what you think has been done well during the crisis, and perhaps what have been those challenges you talked about facing the contact centers?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, Martin, if there is a second wave, and some are predicting that, then I think the good news is the contact centers will really be prepared this time. And this will be part of the, you know, the BCP, business continuity planning. They will be better prepared in terms of the basics like laptops, understanding the challenges with working from home, and what they should provide the agent with, issues that will arise, such as connectivity. So I think they will be really well prepared because they would have tried and tested and piloted various models. I think another thing that we're going to see in the contact center industry, and this is just by speaking to a lot of you know, outsourcers, but also industry leaders, contact centers, is the rise of the gig economy. And this will open up a whole new labor force for the industry. So that's positive, meaning that, you know, if you want to work for a few hours, and I know some organizations are doing that right now, where if you meet the requirements, you have a laptop, good connectivity, you're in a conducive environment, you have the right headset, then you can be an agent. So you tick all the boxes, and you can also end up doing a lot of back-end processing if, let's say, for some reason you can't take calls. So I think, you know, retirees who want to work for a few hours will be suitable, housewives as well. So, you know, that's a very interesting perspective that's come from this. I think with, you know, agents working from home, Martin, the biggest challenge that I've heard from some large contact centers is that social element that is lost when you have agents working from home, because for a lot of them, they have been used to this whole concept of being in a building, being on one floor or multiple floors, and they sometimes even have meals together as a group in a cafeteria, and this is common in the Asia-Pacific region. And they play games together. Training was conducted in a room. So all of a sudden, you know, that social element, that engagement is lost. So I think the challenge there is how do you keep them engaged by using video, you know, collaboration tools, perhaps social messaging apps. And I think, you know, just to end the note on this in terms of one of the biggest challenges that's come out in all my discussions is with agents working from home. I think security has come out many times, you know, and I think it's about I think there's a lot of trust that contact centers have with their agents because their agents are their biggest assets, but I think trusting them with how they handle the data now that they're at home has come out a lot. And I think for example, if it's with regards to customers in government or healthcare or financial services, then it's been difficult for them to have agents working from home. And, you know, for example, dealing with the private and sensitive information like your healthcare records, mobile number, your home address. But, you know, many have also mentioned to me that, you know, the agent can always take out the phone and take a shot of that CRM screen in front of them or just any form of data. And so I think there's huge opportunity for vendors to address this issue in this space. And for example, if you take a photo, that photo then shouldn't come out clearly. You know, there should be some sort of masking. So I think, yeah, security has been a challenge that's come out in a lot of my conversations.
I think you've touched on some very interesting points there, and perhaps two of those things even align the use of the social interaction and what it is that team leaders can do to drive that social engagement element amongst their teams, but also the compliance and regulation side of things. And we've heard on the podcast in recent episodes of leaders who have, you know, rushed out deployment of teams as an example to try and boost the collaboration and the social elements, but of course that in its own then leads to further regulatory issues and compliance obligations, and try and balance those two things together, I think, is providing another layer of challenges. Of course, naturally, Audrey, there are some vendors that are handling that very well. I can think of one called Verint with some of our applications that enables the masking of sensitive information during the remote applications. But this is not a Verint podcast. Well, it is a Verint podcast, but we're not promoting Verint solutions. We're talking about industry leaders here. And from my perspective as a consumer, there appears to be a lot of satisfaction surveys going out right now. You mentioned empathy earlier on, and we're being bombarded, I think, as consumers. It appears to be particularly rampant during COVID-19. What's your take on this tactic, and do you think there's any best practices?
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. We've been bombarded with a lot of surveys, I myself. And, you know, I think asking the right questions during this time is very critical. I think, you know, I recently heard from a friend that a bank in the Asia Pacific region sent out a survey, and they said that the survey was to help understand the customers' needs during COVID-19, but there was no mention of, you know, like if you're facing financial hardship. And I think also one thing that was brought up time and time again by friends, but I myself witnessed this, Martin, whereby if I've stopped using a product or a service from a company, I get asked about that. And, you know, it just shows that sometimes these surveys are sent out blindly by the organizations not really understanding where the customer is at on that journey or if they've stopped using some of your products. But, you know, I think, And I think during this time, if you can ask the right questions, if you can make it short and simple, I think that will go a long way. And, you know, just a few weeks ago, you know, there was the CEO of a big RSL club here that, you know, sent out a survey. And I thought it was a very well-designed survey because, you know, this is a club where, you know, family and friends go to dine. But the survey had really good questions around, like, you know, what are your concerns during COVID-19? How would you like to, for example, see us in the near future when we get back to operating in the new norm, you know, from a engagement perspective? Should our staff wear masks? You know, how would you like to see the seating in the restaurant? How would you like the cutlery to be packaged, for example? So, you know, all these questions came out in a survey, and I thought it was so well designed because it was relevant. They showed that they were listening, but they also showed a lot of empathy. And I think when you can do that, I think it will go a long way. And I think another very good, you know, best practice is, for example, if you can now design surveys that are short and simple, because people are busy today, customers are busy. If you send them long surveys, they will not have time. And in fact, I recently received a very good design survey through my mobile app, and it was easy to fill out. It had about 3 questions, and one of them even asked you to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or an average. So I thought that was good, you know, quick, simple, and it got to the point and it was relevant. So I think designing surveys have to be very, really carefully thought about, because if it's not right, if it's not relevant, and if a customer just gives you that feedback, then you're not really collecting the real or the true data.
I think one of those challenges you talked about there, the surveys, is that often we're finding organizations are deploying surveys almost as a standalone element. You know, perhaps it's Absolutely. A particular marketing department that's pushing out a survey and not doing it as part of a 360-degree holistic customer viewpoint. Do you think there's lessons to be learned there?
Yeah, you're spot on, Martin, because that's what I'm finding as well, like with that example about the bank, you know, in APAC, sending out a survey without really understanding that the customer is no longer using their product or service, and it's marketing that's sending it out. And this is where you're not getting that 360-degree view. You're not. It also goes to show that marketing is probably also not integrated or talking to some of the other departments when designing that survey.
One of the other things we've noticed as a vendor is the desire for organizations right now to deploy intelligent virtual assistants, or IVAs. Do you think we've moved away from some of the basic use cases around the traditional, dare I say, dumb chatbots? What direction do you think the market's moving towards for conversational AI?
I think, you know, Martin, we are entering a new phase of what I call companies relooking at their conversational AI strategy. And this time it's like, how do we make it work? Because I think the market has seen some really bad deployments of bots, and these bots have been very, you know, basic in nature. They do not really go through a tree of questions across various scenarios or permutations, but they're rather one-dimensional. So, you know, hi there, how can I help you? And it'll give you a list of options. But outside of those options, then the bot cannot answer, cannot help you. So, you know, customers get frustrated because that's the first time they're interacting with a brand. That's their first perception of a brand. So when they're frustrated and they can't get what they want, they'll just say, I should have just called the contact center. I should have just picked up the phone and, you know, dialed a number. But I think what I'm starting to see, Martin, that is really positive in the Asia Pacific region, but also globally, is that there's some really good cases now, some very smart conversational AI deployments whereby there is a proper dialogue through text, chat, or voice commands, and that is very promising. And in Australia, there are some very good deployments in the market. It is still early stages, but I think where, you know, consumers would like to see this go is, you know, for example, like when you talk to your home device and they say, you know, hey, I want this, and it takes you there. So similarly, in the contact center, it will be like, I want to speak to someone about my recent booking or my home loan. And through analytics and through listening, through machine learning, they're gathering all that history about the past, but you're also speaking your intent. And from there, it takes you directly to what you want. Because I think right now the frustration is you can say home loan, for example, And the voice comes back asking, you know, did you say home loan? Or sometimes it will say, you know, sorry, did not get that. Can you say that again? So I think, you know, it needs to move away from that. It's early days, but I'm starting to see some really good deployments in the market. And I think the other challenge is also a lot of companies have spent a lot in the last, you know, 15 years on IVR, and there have been a lot of big IVR investments. So it's a big decision, but it's definitely a hot topic right now. So I think where getting the conversational AI deployment right is important, Martin. So it means, you know, working with the right vendor, the vendor that understands the contact center industry. You need to make sure the solution is integrated to a good knowledge management solution. There's got to be a lot of understanding around the ability to listen to calls, listen to call recordings, spot keywords and issues. And then finally, ultimately, I think where this is really going to be important is you've got to find a good balance between that virtual assistant, that conversational AI engine, but also that seamless handoff then to a live agent. Because if that is not there, I feel that that can spoil the experience. So, you know, for a lot of these good case studies I'm seeing right now, it's really there. You know, you can have a conversation for about, let's say, 80% of the discussion about a home loan application. But the moment you want to speak to a home loan specialist, you can request for that and you go into a queue and, you know, you eventually get onto a call. And I think that's important, so that there's a continuous flow of discussion.
Yeah, I think some of those negative examples you give there perhaps could also be compared to the previous topic around feedback, in that a lot of organizations are rushing out bots as a simple call deflection technique or practice without considering the full implication. Or perhaps even worse, they are doing it as a pure cost-saving measure to try and save headcount, as we've all experienced. You know, that's a very short-term objective. And you end up almost being, and you mentioned IVRs, I mean, we've all experienced the horror stories over the last 20-odd years of very dumb IVRs that just end up frustrating the customer. And in this modern age, where we're trying to deliver exemplary customer experience, you know, that really perhaps should not be acceptable. You touched on there also machine learning and artificial intelligence, and they're obviously a core component of a well-designed conversational AI, but we're also seeing the use of those technologies in some of the traditional contact center applications, you know, maybe such as workforce management. How do you think that this, and perhaps the wider topic of automation in general, is going to impact such traditional measures as agent KPIs and metrics?
Yeah, absolutely, Martin. You know, so for now, a lot of the metrics, the contact center metrics, are subjective in nature. So, for example, you know, an agent could take 45 minutes to an hour to complete a call, but the agent would not have met the AHT metric, average handle time metric. But, you know, actually what has happened is the agent was dealing with a prospect who had a lot of questions, let's say about a home loan or product they were looking to buy or a car. And that prospect will likely spend, let's say, $500,000 on the home loan in the next few days, because there's real interest, but there's also urgency from their end. And I think rather than penalizing the agent, you know, I think this is where machine learning and AI can come in to help augment that whole experience. Because yes, the agent took 45 minutes to an hour. Yes, they exceeded all the metrics that were put in place. But true sentiment analysis, true listening, you can spot keywords, but you can also, through emotion detection, find out that the prospect was actually a very happy prospect, and someone senior from the loan department should really get on a call, talk to this person, and close the deal. And so I think, you know, having those metrics are important because they've been around for years, and, you know, contact centers live and breathe by these metrics. But re-looking at them and using machine learning and AI to augment the metrics will be important. I mean, similarly with, you know, NPS, Martin, you know, we always get asked this question about, would you likely recommend the product? You know, was the call satisfactory? And I think sometimes a very unhappy customer that will likely give your brand, leave your brand, gives an average rating, or a frustrated customer just says, yes, they will recommend, when actually they were actually happy with the agent, because the agent on the call was a good agent. The agent took a long time to explain the issues, but it couldn't be resolved. So the customer will, you're not getting the true feedback from that rating. And again, to my previous point, this is why that whole process around sentiment analysis, listening to keywords throughout the duration of the call, and then matching that with the NPS rating is a more realistic way. So I think, you know, this is still very early days, but it's definitely going to go a long way. And I'm starting to hear about some call centers exploring using this and then weighing up how they look at metrics in a whole new manner.
You know, it amazes me and often horrifies me the amount of organizations that are still using NPS as a single measure and not really considering the wider pool of unstructured data they have across all the interactions and use advanced analytics to get a true measure of what that customer engagement really is.
Yeah, I agree, Martin, because I think, you know, NPS has been around for a long time in the industry. Contact centers are used to using that, and they go with that, you know, book approach saying, okay, this is how we look at all the metrics. This is also how we look at NPS. But it's subjective in nature. And even if a company says our NPS has gone up by, you know, 100% or, you know, whatever percent they say, you're not really getting the true analysis of sales, of repeat business, of a very happy customer. And I think there are a lot of missing pieces there.
Indeed. Now, we need to make sure you don't become too Australia-centric on this discussion. And I'd be interested, Audrey, to get your thoughts or your views on what COVID has meant for some of our Asian clients and their use of messaging platforms, you know, for WeChat in China or Line in Japan. Have you seen an increased take-up of those sort of applications?
Yeah, you know, it's a hot topic now, one that I get asked a lot, but one that I'm hearing a lot as well when I speak to contact center leaders in the region. And I think it's because, to your point, you know, now more and more customers are turning to social media applications, and in countries like Japan, for example, Line is being used. And I think contact centers are starting to realize that if we want to get closer to our customers, we shouldn't just dictate the channels of how they should contact us, and that is through a phone call or through email, because those are very traditional methods when your customers today are really on these social messaging platforms. And I'm starting to see some very good use cases. I think an insurance company here in Australia not too long ago just deployed WhatsApp as a channel for their customers, so that's been really encouraging. I know a lot of the airlines are working through that. I know a very big European airline, Martin, just to give context here about China, they felt that they were losing a lot of their business from the Chinese market. And when their chief digital officer and innovation teams, you know, got together, they thought that, you know, we should really relook about how we're engaging with our customers in China. And they realized that in China, you know, everyone uses WeChat. In fact, that's just the norm there in terms of how they socialize on these messaging apps. And so they thought, if we want to get deeper and we want to win back our Chinese customers, we should start opening up that channel. And they did that. They experimented with that, and they found that their customers wrote in. They sent they sent emails. They said, you know, it's great you've given us this channel, and all of a sudden they saw their bookings rise. And so, that whole intimacy that they created through WeChat not only increased their sales, but it just allowed them to explore different areas now. And I believe, like, now they're in a phase of even seeing how they can apply some bots onto the messaging channels. So I think it's absolutely important because when you can confirm a booking, or if you can send a customer, and this is where proactive engagement comes in. If you can alert them that something has gone wrong before the problem arises, before they call you, but you send them an alert, but, you know, just notify them through WhatsApp, for example, I think it will go a long way. The customer will feel appreciated. They will appreciate it, and they will also say, that's great. And I think the option can be there as well. If you want to speak to us, you can call us on this number, or we can get on a quick call. I think another very interesting one that I observed, Martin, and I faced this personally myself, is with Twitter, but not Twitter on the social forum, but the direct messaging platform on Twitter. So as we all know now during COVID, it's nearly impossible to get through to some contact centers. The wait times are really long. And so I had to solve an issue, and I wanted to, you know, speak to someone recently, couldn't get through. So I went to the direct message channel on Twitter, and I was quite impressed because I was served quite well there. And the channel was very active, and it took time, of course, but I found it as another channel for engagement. So yeah, I think contact centers are starting to think beyond the traditional channels of just, you know, voice and email and web chat.
They are, but I think the adoption of some of these other channels again causes its own problems. I also recently needed to amend a service. I couldn't get through. I had to speak to them on Twitter. I ended up being left with no option but to cancel that service on Twitter, and they just processed it as a transactional action. And it wasn't until, I'm guessing, it went through the back end and somebody realized, oh, this guy is actually a very is a long-standing platinum customer. We can't let that happen. I then got an outbound call from their customer care center saying, please don't cancel, please don't cancel. But, you know, by that time, you know, my whole sentiment, my empathy to the organization had reduced significantly. And so I think that's where organizations really need to exercise a lot of care. If they are going to use some of these other channels as low-cost deflection techniques, they need to be aware that they have other processes in place to manage the outcomes that may be generated.
Correct. And I think also if you want to drive that, you know, a lot of companies are still struggling to achieve that whole omni-channel experience. So if you're going to open up some of these channels, you've got to make sure, like what you went through, you know, it's got to be integrated well to the back end. But if that same customer that, you know, had that chat with the agent on Twitter, then when they call the contact center should know about that conversation.
Indeed. And I know a vendor that can help them do just that. Now, you've given us some very interesting insight at what's happening with the industry at the moment due to the COVID-19 crisis. But let's find out a little bit more about what it's meaning for Audrey. You touched upon it earlier on that you are usually quite a well-travelled professional visiting clients right around the region. What impact has COVID had on you, and what has it meant for you personally?
Not being able to travel to Asia to see my family, I think that's been the biggest impact for me, especially being here in Australia now with the, you know, strict lockdown measures and with the borders, you know, not opening up till 2021. And, you know, you worry if there's a second wave, the borders will be shut till much longer. Then it's going to be hard to, you know, travel to see family occasionally. So I think that's been the biggest impact for me, Martin.
Let's see if we can find out a little bit more about Audrey as a person. We asked this of most of our guests coming on the show. Has there been a particular piece of music that has been your go-to tune during the lockdown that puts you in a happy place, a particular tune that makes you feel all is well with the world?
Oh, wow. I'm definitely... I'm a big fan of jazz, so, you know, listen to a lot of jazz, various artists, but I think in recent weeks I've been listening to a lot of Brazilian jazz, so bossa nova is something that I've been listening to. So I love artists such as, you know, Antonio Carlos Jobim and Stan Getz, and yeah, it's just very relaxing, puts you in a very good mood, but it's just incredible musicians that are, you know, you just think like, wow, they're just fantastic. Yeah, so yeah, jazz for me for sure.
That's great. That's the first time we've had jazz mentioned in all the episodes. That's great. How about a book, a film, or a TV show? Is there one title that's keeping you entertained at the moment?
I think I watched The Crown on Netflix. Really enjoyed that a lot. I'm reading a book now called Where the Crawdads Sing, written by Delia Owen. So, you know, it's a book about this girl from a quiet town. I mean, she's barefoot, while, you know, they say unfit for society, but there's a murder that happens, you know, someone's found dead. So, you know, it goes into a court case, but it's just a very well-written book. Obviously, the book got a lot of awards, but I thought something very well put together, very entertaining. So yeah, I read a lot of fiction, so this is definitely one I recommend.
Awesome. And finally, is there a material object or a gadget that, that puts you in a happy place, something you just couldn't be without?
I'm not really a gadget person, but the one device that I cannot live without or that I really love is definitely my Samsung Galaxy Note 10. Great device. It comes with a pen, so it's really nice sometimes where you can take notes, but it also can turn into some sort of a paintbrush, so you can use that to, you know, explore and paint. But I think more than that, it's just the pen, really, that's the big attraction. So yeah, I just use my Samsung for you know, checking emails, but yeah, I think taking notes, I think that's been a big feature of that device.
I'm sure our friends at Samsung will be delighted to hear you give them such a glowing endorsement. Hey, Audrey William, Principal Advisor at the Analyst Firm Ecosystem. It's been great to get your insights today. Thank you so much for joining us on the Verint Podcast. I wish you, your family, your colleagues all the very best for a safe and happy future. And thanks once again.
No, thank you, Martin. And thank you for having me on your show. It's been great. Thank you. And I wish you all the best too. And stay safe.